Forking, a Twilight Saga podcast. Today we'll be talking about chapters 13 and 14, Another Complication, and Closer by the Chainsmokers. I'm your host, Lori.
No! Oh my god.
I was gonna say Closer by Tegan and Sarah, but Closer by the Chainsmokers is like much more of a visceral reaction, I feel.
For sure. Cringe reaction. Well, I'm Sam. Welcome.
Welcome to the podcast. I have so many thoughts about this chunk of chapters.
Holy shit, me too.
I don't think these are my favorite chapters that we've read so far, but there's a lot in them.
There's a lot. They're pretty light and fluffy. Mm-hmm. There were definitely parts that made me angry.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, the sensation that I had reading this was, is this a Tiger Beat magazine interview?
I know. It felt like,
that's how it reads.
It felt like that, but it also felt like, I don't know if they're like Vanity Fair or something else, but they're like the YouTube interviews where you like walk through the house with someone.
Like 50 questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Like 930 questions with Kim Kardashian as you walk through her mansion of
1,067 questions with Bella Swan.
Yeah. And it's just so much. And he doesn't, it's so weird. It's such a weird way of getting this information. To be honest,
yes,
this feels like one of the times where Stephanie is directly responding to criticism. It feels like this is added in because people have said, we don't know enough about Bella, or Bella isn't a well-developed character. Bella doesn't have interests, hopes, dreams. Bella doesn't read as a teenager enough. It feels so reactionary. And I'm
totally.
Like,
yeah, it's,
you know,
it's totally her inserting all this information in after the fact to like give her hobbies or whatever. Not even hobbies, but honestly, though, and we can get into this a little bit more, but honestly, people are like, Bella's boring. Bella doesn't have a personality. And I'm like, Stephanie, if you wanted to give her more of a personality, you could have picked something other than like the most popular films, books, musicians in the entire world to say were her favorites.
Really annoyed. I'm like, okay, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
Should we do it when we get to it? It's like pretty quick to the beginning of
It's pretty close. Yeah, it's pretty close. 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like that's that, and this is the bulk of what I think we are going to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I have thoughts on almost every single one of these choices.
And I did a lot of research on the things that I didn't have thoughts on yet.
Oh, good. I did not, so that's great. Yeah.
Cool.
I made candles.
The research, there you go. The research made me more angry.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I would love to say one of Bella's movies that she pulls out in this section is Gattaca, which you mentioned on the podcast last week, and I'd never heard of it, and I still didn't look into it at all, but I was like, damn.
Yeah. It felt, I read this part right after we recorded last weekend, and so it was like just hours after I had said that, and I was like, my mind.
Your mind.
My influence. She also mentioned the Colin Firth Pride and Prejudice, and which I had also just talked about.
Yes. I was like, the fact that so many of these things are like, let's start with the first sentence of the chapter, which already pissed me off. The first sentence is, I did not feel the usual guilt when I returned to Bella's room that night, though I knew I should. But it felt like the correct course of action, the only right thing to be doing. And he justifies this lack of guilt as he's there to burn his throat as much as possible and train himself to ignore her scent. And here's what I have to say about that. You should feel more guilty because you have an established relationship with her. You should feel more guilty if you were open and honest with her and said, I would like to spend as much time around you as possible because I'm trying to overcome this specific hurdle, and spending as much time as close to you as possible makes that easier. I feel like she would be like, okay.
Yeah, she totally would. She would love it.
So why?
And he doesn't fucking ask.
So why does it happen the way it does?
Oh my God. It's total revisionist history for Stephenie Meyer to be like, oh, the reason that he's watching her sleep is so that he can get used to her scent.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's totally not why he did it when you originally wrote it, but whatever.
It's also not why he did it in the beginning of Midnight Sun.
No, it's not.
Like, he explicitly justifies it the first time as, like, trying to protect her and, like, being anxious that things in her life that are in her room, potentially, like a spider or, like, I don't know, carbon monoxide like, could kill her. Mm. And it's, like, maybe that's just, like, Edward justifying his actions in his head, just, like, finding the next excuse to keep sneaking into her room. But I'm still, like, come on.
I'm so annoyed, and I'm grossed out because a little bit after that, he says, the physical pull, the overwhelming chemistry from the darkened classroom was even stronger here in her night black bedroom. I'm like, she's asleep. You're comparing the time that you felt really, like, drawn to her sexually and horny. Physically when you guys were, when you were super horny watching fucking Lorenzo's Oil in biology class to how you feel when she's unconscious and has no idea that you're there. Like, that's so problematic, Stephenie.
Incredibly problematic. It pisses me off. It's also, like, this answers a couple of questions I had of, like, what happens if she wakes up in the middle of the night? Because, like, you know,
yes,
I'm going to wake up to take a piss in the middle of the night. And
yeah,
he literally, like, shoves himself in the farthest corner of the room and just stays there and, like, trusts that her eyes are not good enough to see him there. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding?
Just leave. How about you just leave, buddy? Just leave. It sounds like he does this multiple times, too.
Yeah.
He just, like, stays in her room when she gets up to go get a glass of water. There was a moment a couple chapters ago where I was like, okay, like, the way she's justifying this is, like, it's all right. But, like, the more time passes, the more I'm like, I hate this so much.
He has to tell her. He has to come clean. He also has to stop until they come to some agreement that he can be there, which we know they do. Yeah. Like, we know that this is gonna be fine, but
it's not, like, Bella. I just need to sit Bella down, like, at the end of the Twilight movie when Renee's like, hey, Bella,
hey,
your boyfriend's watching you sleep and we need to talk about it.
Yeah, it's not okay. God. Moving on from that horrific piece,
Bella gets in the car to go to school with Edward. There's more sweater commentary. Yes. Today she's wearing a brown turtleneck sweater that is more tightly fitted than her ugly sweater. He calls it an ugly sweater. And he says he misses that sweater because this one clings to her skin, to her form, and is just dangerous. We've arrived at the Tiger Beat interview.
Yes, we have.
Or the what is it, J14 or like Pop, Pop Sugar.
Uh-huh, Pop Sugar or all those. Teen Beat. So should we just, like, run through the contents of this interview?
Yes.
So Edward is taking this questioning thing extremely seriously. And as someone mentioned, I believe on Tumblr or somewhere that I saw, we don't get any of this, like, questioning in the book because Bella skips over it because it's, like, to her, they're it's not,
for her.
Like, important questions because she's, like, she knows all this stuff about herself. She knows her favorite books. She knows her favorite movies. She knows her favorite color, etc. And so she skips over this. So this is all brand new knowledge to us. And he literally takes this today's my question day so seriously and does not allow her to ask any questions. So while we get all this information about Bella, we don't get any of this information about Edward.
I know. I wish they would just have a reciprocal conversation.
I know.
We start off really strong. You and I have contemplated about what CD they're talking about here. And we've thought that it's like Linkin Park maybe before.
Yeah.
But Stephenie Meyer has confirmed that the one that they're both listening to right now is Hybrid Theory by Linkin Park. And then he even asked her what her favorite song off of it is. And it's a song called With You. And he's like, why that one? She's like, I don't really know. And I'm like, oh my God.
That is so... That feels like such fan fiction level writing.
Yes, it does.
I don't know what it means. I just put it in there.
He asked her what her favorite movies are, and the first thing she mentioned is the 6-hour Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth, which is, first of all, not a movie, it's a miniseries.
It's also correct. Mm-hmm. It's the correct choice.
It is the correct choice.
Yeah.
Also, the next adaptation, the 2006 or 7 one, wasn't out yet.
Oh, that Keira makes Knightley sense. You know, I wonder if it had been, if she would have put that one in. Because I feel like when I see people watching Pride and Prejudice on, like, TikTok and stuff like that, they're usually watching that one.
Yeah, everyone loves the Keira Knightley version because it's so pretty. And I do love the aesthetics of that one.
It's gorgeous. And I love Keira Knightley.
Yes.
And love her. The Colin Firth one is better.
It is so much better. It is the book. They just perfectly adapted the book. They left nothing out because it's 6 hours long.
Mm-hmm. I would die for Colin Firth. Yeah. Literally, I think the first time I watched this Pride and Prejudice with JJ, I said I would risk it all for Colin Firth. And he was like, what? And he did not take me seriously until he realized how many of my favorite movies have Colin Firth in them. Mamma Mia, Mamma Mia 2.
Yep.
Pride and Prejudice.
That's all you need. That's it.
Yeah. Those are actually, like, all that covers it.
I was happy about the inclusion of this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The rest I was not so impressed with. She mentions a movie called Vertigo, which I have never seen. However, okay, it is a very popular movie. It's a 1958 Alfred Hitchcock film. It's considered his best film. It's an American film noir psychological thriller. And according to Wikipedia, in 2012, it was deemed by some critics the best movie ever made. Ever.
I mean, I just...
What's your favorite movie? Oh, the best movie ever made.
The best movie of all time.
That's my favorite movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, and I don't think this is inherently bad, but I feel like Stephenie Meyer did just pick her favorite movies and her favorite music.
She had to, right?
And her favorite books.
Yeah.
And it's like, it makes sense that you would write in things that you like, but it's also like boring.
It is boring. I guess if we have these fan fiction tropes, and what we already understand about Twilight is that this is basically a self-insert fan fiction for Stephenie Meyer.
Absolutely. It's also like, there's nothing wrong with liking popular things, by all means. Like, we are reading one of the most popular book series of all time that we love, obviously.
Bella would have niche interests. She says she's a nerd. Yeah. Like, everyone has something niche, right?
That's what I was about to say. Everybody has niche interests that, like, I feel like demonstrate more about them than like being like, you know, I love Kill Bill volumes 1 and 2. It's like, okay, what does that tell me about you?
I love Pulp Fiction.
I love Fight Club. Have you seen Fight Club?
I love Fight Club.
That twist at the end, my God. Like that doesn't tell me anything about you. It tells me that you like know what movies are popular. Like, tell me what movie you have watched 900 times that is not like that. Like, for me, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Like, I can quote that movie.
For me, Twilight.
Yeah. Right, of course. That goes without saying. Like, what are your niche interests, Bella? Like, I feel like some of these things are just so basic. Like, okay, you like Santa Monica Pier.
Cool.
Okay. Cool, you love Southern California like everyone else except me.
This blew my mind. Mm-hmm. This blew my mind. When she said Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
I could not believe. Like, I could not believe that she was like, okay, this is just like this
life and death shout out
cinematic universe where Stephenie Meyer wrote Twilight did not let us into Bella or Beaufort, did not like develop what their interest could be, and then writing Life and Death years later was like, I feel like this boy likes Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And I read that and I was like shook to my core. What is this? Who are we?
Yeah.
Like, what is, like, what's happening? And then for her to reinforce it by putting it in Midnight Sun felt like a smack in the face.
Yes.
Like, my past haunting me.
I was simply shocked.
Yeah.
I was simply shocked.
To my core.
I just don't really buy some of these as Bella's favorite films.
Yeah.
Like, I buy Pride and Prejudice for sure. She loves Jane Austen. A lot of the things that she likes are just, like, the classics. Like, old stuff, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally hate old movies.
Yes.
But...
Let me just say this. I feel like if someone asked me what my favorite movies were, and I was trying to be, like, to, like, not stick out or, like, not be judged or something like that, I feel like I would fumble and say things like this. if I wasn't necessarily being truthful, because I don't like to watch movies on the whole.
Right.
I'm not going to sit down and watch a movie if I don't know that I'm going to enjoy it. I have seen very few movies overall. They're not the media for me, usually. Some of them I really like, and I'll watch a million times. But I feel like if someone asked me, what are your favorite movies, I would not know what to say. I'd be like, I mean, I know what my favorite movies are, but, like, is she stumbling because she doesn't seem to consume much TV or movie media? Is she stumbling and says these things because she knows they're popular? Or is she, like, are these, like, is Vertigo, like, literally one of her favorite movies?
It must be because, I mean, later on she's talking about how she didn't date much and she was so busy, like, running her household. So, like, maybe she was too busy to, like, be a normal teenager and, like, watch things that she wants to watch and, like, experiment with media. I don't know. That's not, like, a really good answer to, like, why this is the way that it is, but it's one possible explanation within the canon.
It's so strange. I do hate it, though. And I don't want to, like, put her into a box, but it's, like, no chick flicks?
I know. Like, one of those, like, a chick flick, but, like, with the band, with the music, too, I'm, like, let her, like, a girl band.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were no girl bands in there.
Simultaneously, how are you going to make Bella feel so, so mainstream, so normie, so basic, but also feel, like, this feels like such a, like, she's not like other girls moment without being explicitly she's not like other girls. I'm kind of like...
It's so weird.
Could you say, like, 13 going on 30, What a Girl Wants, The Wedding Planner, like, any of those, like, really good early 2000s.
Early 2000s chick flicks
that I feel like defined my childhood, which would be like Bella's teen years, you know?
Yeah. To talk about the other movies, this skips around, but she later comes up with the other movies that are her favorites. And she says, Gone with the Wind? Come on.
Yeah.
Gone with the Wind. That is, yeah, let's just give her the racist movie.
Yeah. Let's give her the racist movie and then... we'll also throw in, for fun, what seems like the cheapest, like, little moment, Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
You have to be kidding me.
Like, oh, my God.
I literally read that, and that's when I stopped reading this section earlier this week, and I, like, put it down and walked away. Because, obviously, there's, like, an obvious parallel of, like, falling in love with a monster. But you're beautiful. And then, like, we'll go through... one of us is going to have to go through a transformation for us to be together.
Yeah.
And there's all these meddling others that are also magical and, like, not, like, humans that are around. And it's, like, I did put some thought into it. Obviously, Rosalie would be Babette. And I feel like Alice would be like the wardrobe.
Yeah, she would. Esme would be the teapot.
Yeah.
Mrs. Teapot. Yeah. It's like, whatever.
It's like, cool. Like, you and every other. Yeah, it just feels like every single one of these choices is to, like, reinforce this, like, I like books.
Yeah.
And I like things that are intellectual but not too
nerdy
and, like, I don't know.
I think it's interesting that these are all real things too.
Yeah,
like, she could have, like, made up a bunch of stuff that, like, said certain things about Bella, but she didn't. Also, The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I just, like, glossed over that one, and I was like,
and Gattaca. hang on a second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I almost feel like this is nothing. This is just me. But I almost feel like each of these films could represent one member of the Cullens.
Oh my God.
So, like, here's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Gone with the Wind, Rosalie.
Mm-hmm.
Vertigo, I'm going to say Esme because that involves a woman jumping off a cliff and committing suicide.
Okay.
Or ambiguously. That's right. Like, when I looked it up, that was part of it. Empire Strikes Back, Jasper.
Mm-hmm. Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Emmett?
I think it is, weirdly. But, like, it's not because that's all about, like, philosophy, but I don't know. It feels like it is him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gattaca, Carlyle.
Yeah.
Because science.
Right.
And then, but, like, Beauty and the Beast and Pride and Prejudice would be, like, Edward and Bella. So I don't have, like, Alice fit into this.
Just all of these choices are really wild. Even, like, okay, the next part is, like, them talking about candy.
Yes.
And her two favorite candies, black licorice and Sour black Patch licorice. Kids.
Actually, I feel like black licorice, that's, like, that's a really hot take.
It is a hot take.
No, do people, like, in this country even like black licorice?
I think the people that do like black licorice go hard for black licorice, I believe. Yeah. I think it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, I feel like people that do like it a lot, like anchovies on pizza.
Yeah.
It's, like, do people like that? And it's, like, yes, there's a small percentage of them, but they're going to get it every time.
Black licorice, I feel like I only encounter when I go to Norway or, like, my Norwegian friends visit. There's always black licorice candy. Sour Patch Kids. Those are two really interesting choices, but she's, like, so sure of herself when she says them. And, like, I feel like, you know, I think something's wrong with her.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny because Edward doesn't really comment on it at all because I guess these things don't...
He has no idea.
...matter to him because he doesn't eat. He also... I'm sure you had black licorice. I don't know how old black licorice is, so if you're, like, a food scientist expert... history of, like, food historian, let us know. But he's never had Sour Patch Kids. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's had sour candy at all.
He's never had something that sour, probably ever.
Yeah, because, like, they didn't have, like, citric acid flavored coated candy when he was alive and human. So, like,
I don't think so.
He's never had that experience. He definitely can't understand what that's like. So I'm like, why did you even ask? Because you want to get her some?
Yeah, so interesting. That's, I mean, he does say that he's thinking about things he could get her.
Yeah. It's like he would never buy her something so simple as Sour Patch Kids. He, like, his gifts are always, like, really elaborate. And I'm like, well, do you need to know?
He could just get her Sour Patch Kids instead of, like, a fucking car.
Yeah.
She says her favorite scent is lavender or maybe clean laundry. Okay. Mm-hmm. Those are, like, the two most popular Yankee Candle scents. I was very intrigued by this travel question.
Yeah. You know, I feel like this is a good answer. Oh. I like the first part. I think
Me too.
Prince Edward Island is a great answer to this.
That's a great answer.
That's an excellent answer. Like, I wish that all of her answers for other things, like, matched this energy. And it also has, like, a really great reason attached to it, which is Anne of Green Gables, which, I mean, hot take, an excellent trip to take is going to Prince Edward Island. If you like Anne of Green Gables, I've been. We love the Maritimes. It's the homeland of my people. In fact, I love that. That's fun. What a great answer.
New York? Less fun.
Okay. Less fun, but okay. I get it. As someone from the West Coast, it strikes me now that people that live on the West Coast, a lot of them are like, I gotta see New York. And I'm like, okay, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly.
I've seen New York too many times.
Yeah, I've been a few times and I still enjoy going when I go because I love theater, and so that's always fun.
Yeah, that's fun.
I would never live there. And she also says England.
Yes. Also, great answer.
Good answer. It makes sense.
This makes sense for her.
Yeah.
She says she wants to see all the things that she's, like, the places that she's been reading about. Yeah. And I'm like, that's very sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that answer. I think that's great. This answer didn't bother me too much. Your favorite places that you've already been, it's just like, okay, do I like this answer? No. But is it because Bella and I are complete opposites in geographical and weather preference? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
She says she likes the Santa Monica Pier.
She hasn't been many places.
She hasn't.
I feel like she's just listing, like, the interesting places that she happens to have already been to. She hasn't been... He asked her, like, how far she's traveled, and she said the furthest west she's been is La Push.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, Forks is, like, the furthest north from Phoenix she's been.
Mm-hmm.
And furthest east is Albuquerque.
Which really begs the question, like, Renee creates that quilt of t-shirts from their travels. And it's like...
Oh my god, yeah.
Are they all just, like, southwestern United States tourist stops? Because, like, I mean, there's still plenty of them. Like, the Grand Canyon and, like,
well, that's ghost towns. That's only in the movie, right?
I guess, yeah.
Because they in the movie, there's, like, the three-headed lobster from Maine.
Right.
So, like, in the movie canon, like, they've been to Maine. It is interesting. I mean, I understand. I think this is pretty normal, actually, for, like, a lot of younger people to have just not traveled very much at all, especially if you're, like, working class.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only thing that, like, I mean, I guess it makes sense some of these activities that she's described that she did with her mom, because later on she describes Renee some more and talks about how Renee, like, can't settle down, can't do one thing for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Renee would be the kind of mom to, like, take Bella traveling a little bit more, but I would understand, like, if that were not the case, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's super realistic for someone of this age, especially someone living in an area where they're, like, they have everything, like, they're in a major city. There's no reason to really travel outside of that for any really big reason, I guess, to not have really gone that far.
There's this little interlude here where they leave lunch, and at lunch she was very quick to get all of her own food and pay for it, and then to try to clean up after herself, to try to, like, beat Edward to doing those things.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is better energy.
Yes. It makes sense that it would bother her because she's never had someone do that for her before. And also it's, like, weird for someone to do that for you.
It is weird.
Can I just say, This reminded me of the energy that you had when Alex bought your bagel at Bagel Central that one time. And it just really reminded me of that.
What did I do?
You were so bothered by it. You came over and you were like,
oh my God,
he paid for my bagel. And I started laughing, and you were not thrilled that I was laughing. You were like, he paid for my bagel. I don't know what he's doing. And I was like, I think he's paying for your bagel. Explicitly.
Oh my God. Well, that's embarrassing. I think Bella's eating a bagel here.
Yeah.
Well... And then she gets into books.
Yeah.
It's literally all the classics. Like, Little Women, that's cool. That's a cool book for Bella to like. Everything Austen. Bothers me that she says she's not a fan of Emma because she's so full of herself, quote unquote. And I'm like, that sounds like hella internalized misogyny.
Totally. Yeah. I wonder if that's, like, there's Stephanie's opinion, you know?
It's gotta be.
And then to, like, literally, kind of counter that, she says, Jane Eyre. That's my idea of a heroine. And it's like, okay.
Okay.
Congrats.
Yeah, like, no one asked you about your idea of a heroine, but okay.
It's like books that you read in school, too.
It's
not just classics. Because I feel like there's classics, and then there's classics you read in school. And they're two different energies. Clearly, it's like a mix of both, I think. But she throws in To Kill a Mockingbird, Fahrenheit 451, and I'm like, people don't, okay, like, I know this isn't true, but people don't like those. you just read them and you're told they're good,
right?
Like, sorry.
I think those ones I liked better than, like, Catcher in the Rye and Great Gatsby. I didn't like those at all.
Let me fight.
But they're also, like, I would never, what?
Let me fight Holden Caulfield, truly.
Oh, yeah.
I hate Catcher
beat the
Rye.
Shit out of that guy.
I hated it.
Catcher in the Rye.
And I hated it when I first read it. I like did not buy into the whole, like, book, and I remember just being incredibly mad that we were reading it.
Absolutely.
Like, I had also just read, like, The Bell Jar when I first read Catcher in the Rye, and I feel like they accomplish really similar things. They're, like, coming of age stories about young people having a hard time figuring out what the future is like, but I feel like The Bell Jar is so much better.
Bell Jar is so good.
I feel like this is a really good opportunity. What I'm trying to say is this could be a really good opportunity to, like, say something about Bella that's a little bit more deep than she likes books.
I'm actually really surprised that Stephanie Meyer didn't list, like, Virginia Woolf here.
Yeah.
Virginia Woolf or Sylvia Plath.
Yeah, I feel like those two would
Dickinson.
Be really excellent. Yeah, those would be really excellent choices for Bella. And they're still accomplishing something that this does, which is, like, it's an accessible reference for people reading this book. Like, people generally know enough about those three people to, like, throw them into a book and have it serve a purpose, even if you haven't really read the books. But I'm like, that it, like, it makes more sense than I think the books she chose.
It's so interesting, too, because it's like Stephanie Meyer, like, has an English degree.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's the scope of your literary interest? And like, why is it, like, if you're gonna reflect, is this what it is? I don't know. It's so weird.
It's also kind of like, I wonder if she's trying to dumb it down to make Bella seem like more of a high schooler who wouldn't have like read these books yet. But I feel like if you asked me in high school at like 17 what my favorite books were, I'm trying to think of what I would say.
I think I had read Pride and Prejudice by that time, so yeah. I would have said Pride and Prejudice, but the rest of it would not be classics.
Yeah, I would say, like, I used to really enjoy reading, like, Sarah Dessen books. They were, like, teen literature, which is appropriate because this is a teen, you know?
Right, I probably would have said YA fiction stuff.
Yeah.
Like John Green novels.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I love John Green. At that point, I had read The Bell Jar, and I'd read The Handmaid's Tale, which, like, really resonated with me as, like, an 18-year-old white woman who was interested in reproductive rights at the time. No tea to Margaret Atwood, except for all tea. It's just like, I think that this is not indicative of like what a teen would be reading, even if they like do think they're like a little fancy smart bitch, because I definitely thought I was, and I was still reading teen literature and YA lit.
I misspoke. She lists Gone with the Wind as one of her favorite books, not That's the right. film. But, like, whatever.
Still racist.
Chronicles of Narnia. Yeah. But especially Voyage of the Dawn Treader. Okay. That's fun. She actually, she lists out these authors, and I wasn't familiar with a number of them off the top of my head, so I looked up these people.
Mm-hmm.
Douglas Adams wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a classic. Mm-hmm. David Eddings is a fantasy writer who died in 2009. I personally didn't recognize the names of his books, but he's a fantasy writer.
Mm-hmm.
Orson Scott Card sounded familiar to me. Wrote the Ender's Game series and lots of other sci-fi novels. Robin McKinley, she's a children's author mostly, and like has some original stuff, but also did like some retellings of classic tales like Sleeping Beauty or whatever, but with like, according to Wikipedia, like a feminist twist at the end. L.M. Montgomery is the one who wrote Anne of the Green Gables.
Mm-hmm.
She lists Zane Grey, who wrote Westerns, Agatha Christie, of course, detective novels. Anne McCaffrey wrote Dragon Riders of Pern, a whole like series about dragons. And then she lists this other book that Edward doesn't recognize called Tooth and Claw, which is another book about dragons, which is interesting. And The Princess Bride.
Books that I loved at this age, and honestly much younger, but I still liked them at this time, were Little House on the Prairie. I loved those books.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that would fit in. I feel like there's a lot of overlap between Anne of Green Gables fans and Little House on the Prairie fans.
But it'd been really interesting to have, like, really 2000s answers.
Yeah. It feels like this could be anyone's favorite books.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm like,
I can't believe she didn't mention 1,000 Million Leagues Under the Sea or whatever.
Oh my god, that's right. 1,000 million.
Yeah.
1,200 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah. I was just going to say she also mentioned Shakespeare's comedies.
Yeah, which is interesting. I guess. Shakespeare? Come on.
Who doesn't love Much Ado?
Yeah, of course. Everyone loves Much Ado about Nothing. But it's like, I don't know. I feel like I would make different choices. Maybe I'll come up with a list of books that I would have chosen for this.
For sure.
As like our next like newsletter or something like that.
Yeah. I was thinking something similar. I don't have the graphic design skills necessary for this, but I wish I could make like a Tiger Beat style layout. Like interview with Bella Swan.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
With all of her answers.
That would be really cool. You know, it's interesting because from here, Edward goes and is like, I could see elements of these stories in her makeup, characters that had shaped the context of her world. There was a bit of Jane Eyre in her, a portion of Scout Finch and Joe March, a measure of Eleanor Dashwood, and of Lucy Pevensey.
This is just Stephanie being like, yep, Bella Swan is on par with all of the most famous leading ladies of history.
Also, like, I feel like she's less Lucy and more Susan, but pop off.
For sure. Scout Finch is a choice.
It's interesting for Stephanie to be like, To Kill a Mockingbird, a book that children learn about racism through, and then be like, Bella's just like Scout Finch, this little girl who's trying to understand racism. And I'm like, who are you?
So weird. Jane Eyre, okay, whatever. And like, Joe March, I just read Little Women for the first time this year. I was thinking about this. I feel like everyone wants to be Joe. Everyone wants to be Joe.
But a lot of us are Amy.
Bella is actually I feel like Bella actually ends up being more of like a Meg when she's older, I guess.
Yeah.
But whatever. That's neither here nor there.
It isn't. It's also, whatever. I would love to say about Chronicles of Narnia, it feels interesting because people have pulled out these like religious themes of Stephanie's books because she, like, obviously her religion influences who she is. Like, there's no way around it. Mm-hmm. Because Chronicles of Narnia is, like, an almost explicitly religious text. I think I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but as a young Catholic child, I went to a Chronicles of Narnia-themed weekend-long retreat. Which, retreats, by the way, are where they take all your, like, fucking stuff from you. Like, they take your phone, any way that you could, like, phone, iPod, anything like that. And then also put you in a retreat t-shirt for the weekend and make you wear long pants because, you know, modesty and stuff like that. They strip you of your individuality. No, I'm kidding. It wasn't that serious. I've never actually been to anything that traumatizing as a church retreat, but this was kind of wild. We watched the Chronicles of Narnia all together and then talked about how Aslan is Jesus, of course. He sacrifices, oh my blah, God. Blah, blah, yeah. Whatever. But it's really interesting for Stephanie to make reference to another book that is not, I guess it's not explicitly religious, but like the author of Chronicles of Narnia like has said like, oh yeah, of course. Like, of course this is religious. I'm super religious. That's what I'm into. It just feels like a really weird thing to put in. I don't know. Clearly like,
yeah,
it's a book that appeals to so many other people that like don't have a religious tie to it or anything like that. But like, people are out there using this book for religious purposes.
I mean, Bella is well-read. She's well-read for a 17-year-old. You know, it seems like Bella's a student who would actually do the English reading and, like, yeah, actually read those things. She says she, like, the first place she drove when she got her license was to the library in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Which is precious.
It is, yeah.
But, I mean, she said there was, like, a small library that she had, like, basically read her way through. And I guess these are still her favorites despite being exposed to, like, a whole library of books. I don't know. I don't know. It's a choice. Then we get into music. Should I pull Alex
for this? Yeah, let's pull Alex.
It just occurred to me that we've talked about like fucking 15 pages of this.
I know. We've brought you here today.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back on the show.
I'm on the pod again.
Yeah. Recurring guests.
We've asked you here today to give us some musical insight to what might be, I don't know, according to you, maybe a controversial addition to the Twilight canon, which is that Belle and Edward both listened to an album called Hybrid Theory by Linkin Park, particularly a song called With You, which I have not listened to.
We listened to it a little bit together.
Oh, you did play it for me last weekend, didn't you? Oh, he's pulling up the lyrics.
Yeah.
Oh, good, good.
I feel like...
You're familiar with this album, though.
I am familiar with a dark time in my life where Linkin Park was a foundational group, and honestly, this album never did it for me personally.
Really?
Yeah, wow. No.
Why?
I don't know. It's the Hybrid Theories. I think it's like the first one they put out.
Their first album.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like a really Linkin Park's like a really atrocious combination of rap rock and like nu metal. So it makes no sense to me, like why someone who is 100-something years old would want to listen to this awful, awful album that fuses two brand new, like, to that era sounds.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, nothing of any, like, traditional value to be found in in Hybrid Theory. It makes no sense.
I love that take.
That's how I feel. Although the lyrics here, I guess they make a little bit of sense.
In what way?
I don't know. There's just, like, longing, you know, yearning mm-hmm. in here. Like, not being together or, like, unrequited. Ooh, and, like, I hit you and you hit me back on the bottom. Damn, strife. Ooh. There's some strife, too.
Some strife.
Yeah, I don't know. I encourage everyone to listen to this song and experience how it makes you feel. Because it's weird.
I always associate Linkin Park and, like, other similar music with my trash stepfather, which is really interesting because this Linkin Park CD that Bella has is a gift from her not trash stepfather, and I'm like, is Linkin Park stepdad music?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's dad rock for sure.
Yeah. It's also big Florida energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do recognize that the lead singer tragically is not alive anymore, mm-hmm. and I shouldn't speak so negatively, but without any disrespect to him or his legacy, this is trash.
Definitely, like, you can draw the connection that this is Stephanie Meyer's, like, music. Like, she likes this, clearly.
For sure. She loves Linkin Park.
Well, that's the really interesting thing, is some of these selections, yeah, you're right, they seem so rooted in her own interest, and you wonder, like, do the Mormons come out for Linkin Park, or...
I would assume they wouldn't, like, in general, but maybe they do.
Since we have Alex here, I just pulled up the Midnight Sun playlist that Stephanie Meyer created.
Oh, great. Great. Yes.
Because I remember, oh my god, it's long.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first song she put on there was First Day of My Life by Bright Eyes, and Alex was offended. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's, I don't like softballs like that. It's such like a basic ass Bright Eyes song. It's kind of like the one Bright Eyes songs. I don't know. And there's so many other songs that he's written that aren't that one. That's the end of my take.
I feel like we've been saying similar things about other choices that she made in this section. It's like you picked the most basic, and you picked the one that everyone will know. Yeah, and it's like people don't usually have those as their true favorites.
Some very basic picks. Like, what's interesting is that she picks, like the Bright Eyes song, but, like, has, like, Arcade Fire, who's, like, arguably just as known or even more known as, like, an alternative act. Like, she picked, like, a much deeper cut with Ocean of Noise. You wonder if, like, some of these are, you know, were thoughtful picks, and then, just, like, some of them were just completely mailed in, you know, just to, like, fill up a playlist.
I don't know, she takes this seriously, but now that I'm looking at it, she did choose a song from the Edward Scissorhands score by Danny Elfman.
I don't know, where's the Mormonism in this?
She likes dad rock.
Yeah, she's really an enigma.
It's a really interesting mix of, like, kind of hard rock, like, very poppy stuff, and, like, a very interesting smattering of classical music with, like, Claire de Lune, obviously, and there's a Rachmaninoff concerto in here, which mm-hmm. is very interesting. There's a couple indie hits in here, but I don't understand how they came into Stephanie Meyer's realm.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear what Bella says her favorite artists are?
Yes.
So she describes herself as, like, not really a person who, like, is musical and, like, listens to a lot of music, but she says that she likes Simon and Garfunkel, Neil Diamond, Joni Mitchell, and John Denver.
Okay, those are all... Can I swear? No.
Yeah, of course.
How the fuck do you get to Linkin Park from Joni Mitchell?
I know.
Because her stepdad gave her the CD.
Okay.
It's so boring.
Doesn't it imply that, like, she, like, likes them? Or, like, her and Edward just mutually own the CD? Or her and Edward mutually enjoy the CD?
Yeah. She decided that she liked the CD. And they both own it.
If you were raised on Joni Mitchell, and, like, whoever raised you on Joni Mitchell heard you listen to Linkin Park, they'd probably, like, send you to, like, Sunday school or something. I don't know.
It's, like, I feel like it's such an easy way out to ignore the music that was popular at the time that Twilight came out, or, like, the time that Twilight is set, and instead to just, like, pick immortal musicians, essentially, that, like, people will always, like, view as great, rather than being, like, I really like this one song that's, like, playing on the radio right now, like...
Totally.
Come on. We all have one, at least.
Mm-hmm. The John Denver pick is really interesting because, like, who's 16 years old living in Washington listening to John Denver, like, realistically?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, does she sit down? I'd love to think about this. Like, does she sit down at her desktop computer and go to the prototype of YouTube and search John Denver? Or does she have an iPod loaded with it already?
I bet Charlie doesn't even have, like, a music system in the house.
There's no way her truck can play CDs. There's absolutely no way.
No.
No.
She have cassettes, and do we feel?
Maybe. Not of Linkin Park.
Yeah. What a choice. What a choice. Do you have anything else to say?
That was just fascinating.
It is fascinating.
You just want to understand how this could have all possibly come together.
Yeah,
totally.
That's bizarre. Yeah, that's my biggest takeaway. Mm. there's been lots of really great memes that I've been exposed to through my regular, like, non-Twilight-centric channels, that is the scene where Bella sees what Edward's listening to. And I've heard a bunch of amazing things put there lately.
Yeah, I'm glad that meme is back.
Yeah.
That's an old meme.
Yeah, yeah. That,
like, brought it to, like, the public.
Oh, it has so much value.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Cool, thanks for your input.
Coming on the pod, spewing my opinions.
Yeah.
I feel like in the past I've done this before and I've made someone who listened to this mad, so let's hope I can do that again.
Let's alienate our base.
That's what I'm here for. Okay.
Cool, thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, Alex. Thank you. It's like my closing final thoughts on Bella's music that I'll say. Mm-hmm. I will say, I don't think I have a good music taste. I don't. I'm fully a sponge. The only reason I listen to new music is because I see other people listening to it, which I guess is how things work.
That's normal.
That's normal.
Yeah.
But I don't have strong opinions. I don't listen to music very much. I know I've said this before. I still think I would have a better and more satisfying answer to this question as a 17-year-old than Bella does in this book.
Yeah, I would definitely have very strong answers, but I'm just a musical person.
If you asked me when I was 17 what my music taste was, I would say show tunes, because it's literally, like, all I would listen to independently, like, if I was choosing to listen to music. It wouldn't be Phantom of the Opera, which is the one show tune show, like, show that Bella mentions here. It, like, also the longest-running show on Broadway, I believe, of all time.
Yeah.
And clearly the easy choice if you're going to throw a show tune in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make it Cats. Something else.
I was going to say Cats.
Anything else. It could still be Andrew Lloyd Webber. It could just be different. It just could be different. Like, it didn't have to be Phantom of the Opera. Like, that's boring also. You're picking all the boring choices. It doesn't really tell me much more about Bella than
I know.
Like, I knew before. I just feel like I could have done better. I'm
exhausted by these choices. He asks her, like, Coke or Pepsi?
Dr. Pepper.
I'm like, you don't know what those things are. Yeah, she says Dr. Pepper. Okay, quirky. I really, like, I cringe when I read this, because she's like, favorite pizza.
Do you want to do it like we're Edward and Bella?
Yes, absolutely. I've been wanting to do this for like a week.
Okay. So who are you
going to be? Do you want to be Edward or Bella?
I don't care.
Okay. I'll be Edward.
Okay.
Favorite TV show?
I don't watch a lot of TV.
Coke or Pepsi?
Dr. Pepper. Oh my god. I can't.
Alright, I gotta get in character again.
Okay.
Favorite ice cream?
Cookie dough.
Pizza?
Cheese. Boring, but true.
Football team?
Pass.
Basketball?
I'm not really a sports person.
Ballet or opera?
Ballet, I guess. I've never been to the opera.
Wow, and scene. Are all of our listeners at home just so enthralled by that incredibly interesting conversation?
Like, what do we know about Bella from that we didn't know before? Like, those things don't tell us anything. Like, this is people on like Twitter or TikTok or wherever say that liking The Office is not a personality. These things are not a personality. If Stephanie was trying to give Bella a personality, she has failed. Like, this is not it.
Objectively, I can't believe.
I feel like in her position, I would just be like, you know, like, first of all, I'd pick better answers. Second of all, I wouldn't have done it like this, because it comes across as, like, so...
When I was reading it back for the second time, I was, like, I was a little bored. Usually I'm not, like, bored rereading, but the way it's laid out is, like, a little boring, honestly.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's such a really very transactional conversation.
We do get some nice little nuggets of information about her past, though, coming up, though, after they talk about flowers. And she says that she was in Girl Scouts for a little while. And she was put in dance class, which we knew. When time passes, they go fucking watch Lorenzo's Oil again. He goes to a different class.
He goes to...
He, like, touches her face again.
He goes to Spanish. He confirms that his plot with Emmett worked to get Ben and Angela together. But he also chooses to spy on Bella and Jim again, despite her displaying discomfort and asking him specifically not to do that. Which he doesn't promise to do. He, like, gets out of it by, like... being like, what if I promise to do this other thing? He finds out about this bet that his siblings have going.
Yes. I remember he does talk about this in Twilight briefly, and I remember being like, oh my god, I want to hear about the bet.
And we do.
and here it is. He's really mad about it, but like, I don't care.
Essentially, like, Jasper and Rosalie bet that Edward's gonna kill Bella at the meadow, and Emmett and Alice are betting that he is not going to kill Bella at the meadow.
Mm. He's mad about it.
He's so pissed off.
But then he's like, you know what? Whatever.
Yeah. He's not fighting his siblings as much as I think he normally would be in these circumstances, because he's distracted by wanting to be around Bella. So he doesn't hang back after class to fight Emmett about this at all. He just, like, moves on.
He also reads Mike's thoughts again in gym class. Mike is, like, being all sullen about how he never had a chance with Bella or whatever. And he says, guess when Cullen wants something, it doesn't take him long to get it. The images that followed, his ideas of what I'd gotten, were offensive. I stopped listening. I didn't like his perspective, as though Bella had no will of her own. Surely she'd been the one to choose, hadn't she? If she had ever asked me to leave her alone, I would have turned around and walked the other way. But she wanted me to stay then and now. And I'm like, it's really... Okay, actually, this is such a hyper-individualistic neoliberal understanding of what consent is that doesn't take into account, like, power dynamics. Don't make that face. I'm right.
Don't make that face. I'm right. That is not where I saw your sentence going when you started it. So I was just, like, adjusting
my expectations. That's not where I intended to go when I started either, but, like,
the way that
that's what it is.
Yeah. Go an episode without saying neoliberal.
No, I will not. I simply will not.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I think you're right. I feel like people often don't pause to think about whether they've given people the opportunity to say yes or no. And to be honest, Edward does think about it. Like, he does, like, think, like, oh, well, if she didn't want to get in the car with me, she would say no, or something like that. Like, I can't think of a specific answer. Like, oh, if she didn't want to do this, like, she would say no. And it's like, you've given her no indication that you would respect her wishes regardless of what she says. And also, you've thrown her out of her element. You've confused her. She knows that you're the only person that has the information to, like, fill in the gaps of, like, what her questions are at this point. So, like, she doesn't really have a choice unless she wants to abandon, like, not knowing what happened to save her at the car. Like, there's no actual choice. It's all, like, manufactured choice.
Yeah, totally. It's not like consent is just someone saying yes or no.
Yeah,
it's so much more than that. And it's, like, constant and ongoing. And a lot of this is, like, he's waiting for her to just say no out of nowhere instead of him asking out loud. And so, and that is because Stephanie has inserted it after the fact into these conversations, where in Twilight he never did ask.
I would argue that, like, she doesn't have the information still at this point that she needs to understand what she's saying yes to, which is a huge part of, like, her ability to be like, yeah, I'm down for this. Like, I think she'd say yes anyway, but I feel like at this point she needs to know every danger that, like, could come of this.
Yeah.
And the context of, like, yes, I followed you to Port Angeles, but also I've been watching you sleep. Is that still okay with you? like, she doesn't know the depth of his... She needs to know the depth of his feelings, and not just in a, like, I love you more than you love me way, but, like, in a way where he's, like, I'm having a hard time doing impulse control, and I'm having a hard time, like, respecting your boundaries. And I think, like, my feelings for you are this deep, and that I am not able to, like, respect this boundary or this boundary. I'm not able to be honest with you and not spy on you during these times. Is that still okay with you? Or, like, do we need to, like, reevaluate? Like, none of that conversation is happening.
Absolutely not. So it feels really foolish when he's, like, trying to convince himself that it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think sometimes he goes the opposite direction, where he's like, no, like, it's my responsibility entirely, so I'm not going to give her any choice at all. And I'm like, the answer exists somewhere in the middle of these two extremes.
We do get a little information about, like Phoenix and how much she loves it, which I think is really nice. Totally. I actually really like this section. This tells me more about her than any of her choices in media that she consumes.
I really like this passage in Twilight as well, where she's describing what she's telling Edward. She's like describing
the gist Phoenix,
but like in a more indirect way. We get all of it here, and it's still just as beautiful as it was in Twilight, and I like that. He also says that they lived in New Orleans for a time, for a little while, and I'm like, that's so vampiric. New Orleans vampire culture is like a thing, and I can't remember if I've said this on the podcast before, but I've said it to you, I believe. I saw a TikTok where someone who was studying New Orleans vampire culture was saying that within that culture's terminology, a swan is a person who is not a vampire, but is like clued into the vampire's world, and it's like basically runs with vampires sort of situation. Yeah. So like, I don't know if that was intentional that Stephanie Meyer called her Bella Swan.
It'd be really interesting if it was. I would be surprised if she did that much research, to be honest.
Yeah. And someone had said, I don't know if they said it in the video or if someone like in the comments of that TikTok said it, but like someone made the point that a swan by definition cannot be a vampire. So someone was like, so she had to get married and become a Cullen before she became a vampire.
Interesting. Wow, I love that.
I know. Oh, Bella and her cactuses.
Bella and her cactuses, her cacti. and her love of the desert.
She said she worked at a, I don't know where she said it, but she worked at a plant nursery.
I think it's the first mention, like explicit mention of like a place that she's worked in the past. Yeah, I do like this section. It does, like the way she describes the desert. I understand that there are people that like it. I live in it. I hate it. The way that she was like, the smell of the rain. First of all, I don't know what she's talking about. It smells normal to me, but maybe it's just because it hasn't rained in a while that I don't remember what the rain smells like here. Mm-hmm. But it literally hasn't rained in, I don't even remember the last time it, like, I truly do not remember the last time it rained. The last time I, like, recall it raining, I feel like it was, like, January. I'm sure has rained since then. I just don't, like, remember it. But anyway, I'll be keeping my nose out for the next time it rains to see if I can smell that little scent that she talks about.
Clean desert.
Yeah.
I just looked up the two parks that she mentions in Phoenix. I just assumed they were real, and they are. They're both in the Scottsdale area. She mentions Cactus Park and Roadrunner Park. He has her describe her old bedroom in Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like weird. It's kind of weird to me that Bella's messy.
It doesn't really line up with her being a Virgo, first of all. And second of all, it doesn't really line up with the way that she talks about why she likes the desert so much is because it's like minimalist and she thinks she's a minimalist. Yeah. Like, she says, I like the minimalism. It's an honest sort of place that doesn't hide anything. So it's, like, confusing to me that she is a messy person.
Right.
In her,
and like, also, space. She, in various parts of Twilight, I feel like she's, like, stress cleaning or organizing things.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's weird that she's cluttered.
Maybe it's, like, genetic and she gets it from Renee. But, yeah, it's really weird. And she says, I haven't been here long enough to make a mess. And it's, like, interesting because, I mean, like, I don't think most media that isn't focused on, like, I mean, like, they were never going to show, like, a messy room in the movie or anything like that. I feel like that's reserved for, like, a certain, like, it's not going to tell us anything about her, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like it lines up with who I think she is.
And there's also mentions here about, it's kind of like implied that she doesn't really plan on going back to Phoenix, and that's like news to Edward, and I'm like, oh yeah. I guess he wouldn't know that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know, maybe I'm thinking about this more, like, do we feel like she's just like got a depression mess in her room?
Yeah, possibly.
I feel like she would want things to be clean, but
yeah,
we know that she's apt to be a little depressed from time to time, and so maybe that's when things get messy, and she hasn't really maybe made that connection between why, like, she's a messier person, and it's like more related to her, like, her mental health than it is to, like, her wishes about how her space would be.
That would make more sense than just, like, her randomly being messy.
Yeah,
that's kind of the end of the Inquisition of this chapter. And then I do hate this next part. This part was weird for me. So Edward.
Yeah.
And Bella. Edward has driven Bella home. She goes inside. And this is the part where Billy and Jacob run into her there.
The first thing that Billy thinks before he even knows Edward is there. This really raises a question for me.
Yes.
He says, vampires ought to be safe enough for the boy. No reason to run into any vampires here, even if this is neutral territory. I hope I was right to bring him into town. It's Billy talking about Jacob. My question is, I feel like there's two possibilities here. One, he tries to keep Jacob on the reservation as much as possible, always, because he is afraid that if they do come too close to the Cullens, Jacob's wolf gene could be sparked.
That's true.
Is that something that he's constantly worrying about, or has Sam already turned into a werewolf once and now he's freshly concerned about it?
It's ambiguous, I guess, because I felt weird like about how the way that his thoughts are written here. It reads like Billy's driving into town and he's like, oh, hope there's no vampires in town. Then he's like, oh my god, a vampire. It's like very like,
yeah,
Billy is so like wise and like calm in his demeanor with Bella, and just the way that he is, that we understand him as a character, doesn't line up to the way he's thinking so like frantically in this section. It feels weird to me.
It's strange. It's also like, I think you're right. It's either like a huge coincidence that he happens to be thinking about vampires right now, or he is constantly afraid living in such close proximity to the Cullens that every time he leaves reservation land, which is like the treaty line, the boundary, he is concerned. Mm-hmm. Like every time he steps foot off of the reservation without, like, I guess with Jacob with him, I guess. I'm not sure.
Yeah, which is, like, very sad if that's the case.
Yeah. He seems to not want the werewolf life for Jacob.
Yeah.
And it also raises this question of, like, is it literal distance and proximity to a vampire that poses a threat? Or is Billy guessing? Or, like, what's going on? It's really strange.
Billy is, like, thinking about, referring to Edward as an it, which is, like, a choice.
Yeah.
It feels like a little bit of a stretch to me.
It's really interesting. And his first three thoughts when he does process that it's Edward and a vampire, and he says, cold one, vampire, Cullen. Those are the three thoughts that, like, stick into his head immediately. And I'm like,
okay.
Huge.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, they've been living in the town for a couple of years.
A couple of years, yeah. And I don't know. Edward says, you know, this was neutral territory. I had as much right to be here as he did, and he knew that. I could see it in the tightening of his frightened, angry face, the clenching of his jaw. What is it doing here? What should I do? Those are his thoughts. We'd been in Forks for 2 years. No one had been harmed, but his horror couldn't have been stronger if we had been slaughtering a new victim every day. So, like, it doesn't make sense that he would be, like, that afraid, so maybe it would have something to do with him being afraid for Jacob.
Yeah, it really does seem like there's something that has freshened his fear of the Cullens.
Yeah.
Whether that's Sam already having turned or something else, I'm not sure. It shouldn't be a surprise to, I mean, I guess it's a surprise when you show up to your best friend's house and there's a vampire parked outside, but, like, it shouldn't come as a surprise to him that he would run into the Cullens in such a small town, and there's 7 of them, you know?
Yeah. And I assume
that they don't have, and I don't know if this is true, but I assume that they would be regularly having to take trips off of the Quileute Nation for some things, you know what I mean? Right. Like, not everything is going to be on their land. Like, like, they would have to make probably special trips to the store if they don't have, like, the certain thing in stock at whatever, like, stores they have there. I don't even know, like, I don't know. But they may share a grocery store with the town. They may share whatever. Like, I don't know. But it seems like a very strong reaction. Yeah. It seems like a really, really, really strong reaction to seeing Edward.
Edward also always, he keeps referring to Billy as, like, an old man. And I'm like, aren't Billy and Charlie the same age? Aren't they just, like, middle-aged?
Yeah. The way that they think about each other, like, on both sides is very strange.
It is very strange. And it's very interesting how Edward is thinking about Jacob here. He, like, likes Jacob here. And I'm like, What's the purpose of this?
In another world, it seems like Jacob and Edward could be friends, and that he, like, really enjoys being in Jacob's mind. He, like, likens it to the mind of Angela, which we know he loves Angela. It's really interesting.
I feel like that is a theme that comes up more, like, in Eclipse, in that tent scene where he's like, you know, maybe in another life we could be friends. And then, like, the implication is that they will be friends and that, like, they'll be, like, family. Mm-hmm. You know, for eternity, essentially. It's interesting because I feel like so far in the book, he's had some negative thoughts about Jacob, but now they're, like, he's much more, what's the word?
Like, ambivalent?
Yeah, he's much more ambivalent. He's, like, not actually, he thinks of Jacob as, like, a child.
Yeah, yeah, he definitely does, which I think is appropriate because he is.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, there's still these pieces of, like, Edward jumping to, violence.
Yeah.
He, like, literally follows them home back to the boundary line to make sure that Billy doesn't turn around and, I don't know, do what? I don't know. This little passage here, it says, "I felt fairly sure that there was no new danger. Billy would follow the rules. What choice did he have? If we broke the treaty, there was nothing the old men could actually do about it. They'd lost their teeth. If they broke the treaty, well, we were even stronger than before. 7 instead of 5. Surely that would make them careful." I just really want to say
yeah,
that this paragraph written outside of Twilight is a pretty great summary of the way that the United States has treated every single treaty with any indigenous nation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what were they going to do? They've lost their teeth, which is they've lost the upper hand in any... Mm-hmm. combat situation because we have the best technology and they're like somehow backwards. There's more than us. There's 7 instead of 5. We're stronger. They're nothing. We don't, like, even if we break this treaty, who cares? They can't do anything about it, is literally the attitude that the United States has every single time the government breaks another treaty with an indigenous nation.
Ugh,
like,
God,
how do you write that
and
think this is fine? Like, how do you write that and not think about colonization?
Like, I know. And then he's like, though Carlisle would never allow us to enforce the treaty that way. And I'm like, you want to do that?
Yeah.
It, like, brings it back to what he said before about slaughtering the tribe a couple chapters ago. Yeah.
The fact that he ever thinks that's an option is, like, really disturbing. And it's like, why do you feel entitled to, like, act violently towards these people who... I don't know. Like, even not even acting violently, like, why do you feel entitled to break this treaty at all?
It's interesting the difference in tone, the remorse or lack of remorse when he's thinking about killing in general. Like, towards the beginning of the book where he was, like, coming up with a strategy of how he was going to kill, like, all 19 people in the biology classroom, he felt a lot of guilt about that.
Yeah.
And, like, those are, like, just randos. You know, those are just, like, randos, probably mostly white people. So when you're thinking about, like, targeting a specific ethnic group, like an indigenous group, let alone...
Wiping them out entirely.
Wiping them out. That's genocide, my dude. Congrats.
Yeah. Literally genocide. I just don't understand how Stephenie Meyer... I have said this before. I said this the last time we talked about something horrific that Edward thought or said about the Quileutes. I don't understand how she lives in today's world. Like, not to excuse how her attitudes were when she wrote the book, because there is no excuse, but how does she live in a world where we have mainstream coverage of things like the Dakota Access Pipeline?
Mm-hmm.
And more recently, like, I feel like there's been more conversation about indigenous sovereignty and, like, pockets of areas of the United States. I don't know, like, which would be
even about, like,
coming
Columbus
across
Day.
Her local news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Columbus Day, mascots.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like that. But, like, right now there's a huge, like, there's two huge things going on, at least, with, like, the construction of the border wall in San Diego on Kumeyaay land. Mm-hmm. There's, like, literally, like, protests every single day on the border because they're trying to construct a wall on Kumeyaay land and breaking a treaty. And then there's the Mi'kmaq fishing stuff going on in Nova Scotia right now.
Yeah.
And that's, like, just two things that are making national, like, news. And I'm like, how do you write this? And, like, not interrogate where it's coming from.
I know, it's just so obtuse. we said it before, this had to pass through so many hands before it got published.
Yeah.
And I think people are just like, yeah, Stephanie, you can write whatever you want because it's going to make us millions of dollars. But, like, we can have standards. At what cost, you know?
She could have put an author's note in or something, yeah. Like, about, like, anything. Like, she could have done something and she did nothing. I know. You know?
Maybe it's, like, an admission of guilt thing, because if she acknowledges it, then, like, she could get, like, sued by the Quileute Nation, and it's like, yeah. she should be.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was it. Yeah. It's gross. I hate it. Probably it's my least disgusting. Favorite chapter, or not my least favorite chapter, my least favorite paragraph in the whole book.
Yeah. It's interesting because Carlyle, he goes to see Carlyle about it, and Edward's like, you know, they what can they do about it? Blah, blah, blah. Carlyle's like, you shouldn't think of it that way.
I think it would be really interesting if Carlyle was a little bit more explicit with Edward.
Yeah.
Of, like, walking him through why he shouldn't be thinking of it that way. Clearly, like, Carlyle is, like, not going to stand for this, and that's great. But, like, you shouldn't think of it that way, though they've lost their protectors. They are in no danger from us. And it's like, you should be more explicit with your son about how harmful it is that that's what he jumps to.
Accountability. Where is it in the Cullen family?
Nowhere. Nowhere.
Nowhere near as present as it needs to be. The rest of the chapter is kind of cute, though. Mom time.
Yeah.
It's my time.
Yeah. Carlyle begs Edward to go home, essentially. And because seriously. Edward, I mean, like, Edward hasn't been going home. He's, like, dodging all these, like, family things. Like, these are the people that he spent literally 24 waking hours every single day with for the last however many years. With, like, almost, like, very few exceptions. And, like, he stops coming home altogether, like, days on end.
Yeah.
And Esme misses him. And Carlyle's like, can you please come home?
Like... go see your mom.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think that this is vampire therapy, this conversation between Esme and Edward. She clears the house. She asks the siblings to leave so they can be alone together. And I would love to know where everyone went and what the fuck they're doing out in the woods.
Yeah.
Just being like, Edward, little bitch boy.
Yeah. Rosalie probably was like, I'm not leaving. This is my house too. Until Esme was like, okay, can you go?
Yeah, they Esme and Edward sit down and at the piano together and have a heart to heart. It's pretty sweet. And I do like what Carlyle and Esme do for Edward in this section, with Carlyle being like, you know, he should be doing it more, but being like, hey, stop thinking of the Quileutes that way. Mm-hmm. In a way that is not nearly as explicit enough. And then also with Esme, what Esme's doing is being like, are you okay? Like, are you happy? And like, I don't, like, it seems like you're punishing yourself, like you're causing yourself pain, like don't like to see you in pain for this. And I'm like, yeah, someone's gotta fucking say it. I mean, I think she's concerned, and I'm like, I'm concerned too. Like, the burning thing that he's doing, like, intentionally, like, trying to get used to her scent, like, that's, like, it's kind of self-harmy.
Yeah, totally. You know? It, like, it definitely is. Yeah.
So, like, I'd be concerned, too. I'd be like, you're on some new shit right now, and I need to check in with you.
It's literally one of the only forms of, like, physical pain that they can really feel.
Yeah.
It seems like, so, it's interesting.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of the chapter.
I would love to do the Forks cast.
Let's do that.
So today in Forks, it is 63 degrees and cloudy, low of 49, high of 64. The air quality is good. We've pretty much recovered from the fires at this point, which is really exciting.
Fuck.
As far as like air quality goes, I know that like entire communities have been devastated, so like there's not recovering from that, but weather-wise, looking up.
Yeah. All right, chapter 14, Closer. I enjoy being in these in-between chapters. This is one of the chapters that will be between, or, like, towards the end of this. I don't know. We're about to be in, like, that five-chapter stretch between now and the meadow scene that, like, for Bella is, like, just the next chapter, I think. But
yes,
this is thrilling. In this chapter, they're at school again. We're getting closer to when Bella and Edward are going to go to the meadow together alone. And Edward is continuing to ask Bella more questions about herself and starts off by asking her about her mom. And, like, Bella goes off and does this thing, tells these things about Renee, about how it's hard for her to, like, stay in one place and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and the thing that it, like, tells us about Bella is, like, and Edward says this pretty much explicitly, is that, like, Bella wants to be of use to people and be helpful to people. She's like a helper. She likes to be around. And I had just taken the Enneagram test.
Oh, yeah.
And gotten 2 as my number, which mm-hmm. I think also really applies to Bella here. Like mm-hmm. a helper, like needs to feel useful, wants to nurture and take charge and be helpful. And like is a caretaker and like needs to be needed and stuff like that, which is really interesting.
This is my fucking favorite bit, I think, of this whole section, is the part where Edward asks her about like her dating history.
Yeah.
And she has the audacity to say that her first date was with her 6th grade square dancing partner.
She says, like, she says, I don't have that much experience. And he goes, put the bar at its lowest setting. And so she's like, okay.
She really does. Yeah.
She does.
I really like this other little anecdote she has where she was, like, tricked into going on a group date and then, like, kind of got out of it and got to, like, read the whole time at an ice skating rink. Mm-hmm. Bella. That's, yeah. See, that is the most Bella story I've ever heard.
Absolutely. Also, like, her excuse for, like, why she doesn't go on dates or why she didn't go on dates is that she was actually busy. Running a house is really time-consuming, and she also had a part-time job, not to mention school. She mentions that if she's going to college, she's going to need a full-ride scholarship, which is really something to think about, being the organizer in the house and also working part-time as a high schooler is, like, such a challenge. Like, such a challenge, because high school is, like, one of the most, truly, I think it's one of the most exhausting things I've ever done. And I've gone to college and grad school, and I think high school was a different beast.
For sure.
For me, personally. It was awful.
Yeah. I think about her here saying something like she needs a full ride scholarship to get to college. And I'm thinking about, like, all the things that go into that. When you're in high school, you need to, like, beef the fuck up out of your resume. Like, you need to do mm-hmm. extracurriculars. You need to, like, mm-hmm. do volunteer things. Like, it sounds like mm-hmm. Bella's a person who's probably in a lot of advanced placement programs. But, like, that mm-hmm. alone wouldn't be enough to get her, like, a full ride scholarship. I mean, it might to, like, a state school. Mm-hmm. She might be able to get something, but, like, you need to have, like, a flawless record. You need to be, like...
Like, she has to hold leadership positions in, like, extracurriculars.
And
like,
I don't think she did any extracurriculars.
Yeah.
It's not too late. She could still
It's interesting, though, this conversation about, like, what her future hopes and dreams are, because that's a huge critique of Twilight, is that she just doesn't seem to have any other plans for her future. And by a huge critique, I mean I literally have been bothered by this for years.
Yes.
Like, she doesn't have an alternative plan. It seems like the plan is vampire as soon as she, like, meets Edward, and so she doesn't have these future plans, but come to find out she did have them. She just never thought about them.
He starts talking about college here. I'm like, great, love that for you. Let Bella go to college. I'm sure she does eventually. Mm-hmm. It's, like, not an issue at all, I'm sure.
She will, yeah.
Yeah. I got really emotional, honestly, reading about what she says she'd like to, like, do with her life. And she says she would like to teach college English courses, which she admits is, like, the more practical choice from what mm-hmm. I think she implies she would really like to do, which is work at a publishing company as, like, an editor mm-hmm. or in publishing in some way. And I'm like, yes, girl. That makes so much sense. Like, everyone has always mm-hmm. kind of speculated that it would be something to do with books or something academic. And I'm like, thank you for saying it, because...
Oh my god, I bet the people that behind Twilight Phase reading this were like, yes! That's
nice! We should send them a message.
Yes! This isn't really talked about too much. And maybe it is later, and I just don't remember, like, throughout the series, but, like, her future plans involve getting the fuck out of the cold and, like, getting out of her, like, geographical location. She's literally, like, thinking about, like, schools in Hawaii and, like, anywhere below the snow zone is what mm-hmm. she calls it. She's making a huge sacrifice by becoming a vampire and basically condemning herself to living in those places mm-hmm. that she said she never wanted to be in.
Yeah.
For, like, her entire existence, which is much longer than she thought it would be, of course. It's, like, she's giving up that in addition to, like, I guess her her other dreams or stuff.
Yeah. I think she does change her mind about her weather preferences, like, as the series goes on. Like, she likes forks. You know, she's starting to, like, adapt into that climate. But, yeah, it's not... It is such an explicit thing that she, like, doesn't like that weather. I don't know.
I'm like, thinking, like, she does eventually make the conscious decision, like... I don't care what it takes. Like, I'll give up everything if I have to become a vampire to be with Edward. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's huge. That's fucking huge.
It's huge. All for a man.
There's this, like, little line here, too, that says, it's like Edward musing on how he can make himself the safest for her and, like, make her life the most, like, how she wants it to be, but also, like, being in it. And it's really beautiful. It says, I wondered again how I could make this happen, be with her without negatively impacting her life. Stay in Persephone's spring, keep her safe from my underworld.
I'm emo.
Wow. The way I cried. One tear.
There were some really lovely passages in here that I really enjoyed. Like, genuinely, but I'm not gonna talk about them. We get this vision from Alice, which was like, I don't know, last episode I was talking about how it was in the draft and she had taken it out, so she had moved this part up into this section of the book, and I still don't really get it, but I think that next chapter it'll become way more apparent as to what the hell is happening.
I hope so.
Because I don't understand. It seems like Alice is upset about this vision. She's like, seems like she's actually very genuinely concerned that Edward is going to kill Bella, and she's like the only Cullen who's like taking corrective action to make sure that that does not happen. And I stan.
Yes, I love this. I love that she's getting involved. She like refuses to sit back and watch it happen. She's like, no, like, I love Bella. You will not rip her from my life before I even get the chance to talk to her.
It makes more sense that, like, that's why Alice and Edward are leaving. It's not just like, oh, he's just leaving in the middle of the day. Like, they're leaving. She's gonna, like, make him go hunting, and she wants to see the future in her head and, like, have no other alternative, basically, I think. Mm-hmm. Which is great. Good. Someone's gotta do it. Also, there's such good insight into Alice's visions here and how they work at the end of this chapter. Alice and Edward are going to get Bella's truck for her, bring it back to school. And, like, on the way there, Alice is, like, deciding where she's gonna, and, like, Edward is deciding, like, where they're both gonna look in the house for the keys. And just by deciding where they're gonna look, she finds them, and they don't even have to do any of that. Yeah. So fucking cool.
So Edward doesn't even go in the house, actually, like... Alice goes up, gets the key from where she, like, knew she was gonna find it, and then, like, goes, and it's, like, damn, that's a huge, like, efficiency. You save so much time. Like, it's amazing.
And there's, like, I mean, you just have so much knowledge just based off of, like, if you know how to do that, if you know how to, like, make a solid decision just to get the information. Like, there's a, I know, like, one of the quotes that Stephenie Meyer put on the website before the book came out was about Alice, like, perhaps being omniscient, and like, if you look at it that way, like, you kind of are if you can kind of bend the rules to your favor. It's cool. Yeah, I liked that.
Rosalie just like glares at Bella and is really mean to Bella, but like, so honestly mean. Like, she's so not accountable mean. To Bella. It's fine. It says, goggle at me, will you, you little bat face nuisance. And like, Edward hisses beneath his breath at Rosalie across this cafeteria.
What the hell is this?
Which is so funny.
Oh, who do they think they are?
Alice gets to introduce herself to Bella, which is something she's so been looking cute. Forward to, but now she's like stressed about it too, because she's stressing about this vision of the future that like, she's gonna have to confront with Edward, and so she's like, it's kind of like this bittersweet, like, she's not like playing it up to her full
Alice potential. Well, it's interesting here too about her visions is that they had seen this happen, this conversation happen earlier in the day, so they knew that it was going to happen. They just didn't know when or how, and then it became clear. But Edward says it starts happening, and Edward says, I followed my script. So it's like he's choosing to just do what was in the vision.
Go along. Yeah,
it's not like he's locked in.
He's not being compelled to do it. He's like, he's seen it, and he doesn't see, like, a negative impact to it. So he's like, well.
That's so interesting. There it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it is really refining our understanding of what Alice can do. And I think that there'll likely be more of that throughout the next little chunk.
Yeah, I'm lit. give me Alice time, Alice screen time. That's it.
Yeah, that's all I have. Yeah, it was a pretty brief chapter and not super jam-packed full of much action.
Oh yeah. So. I think we literally spent like over an hour talking about the Bella's like book and music choices, and I have no regrets.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely not. That was the most interesting piece so far.
Yeah.
It's been really fun to read this and know that there is no like draft equivalent and that this is like purely new Twilight content that I'm reading in the year 2020.
I wonder how old some of the information is though. Like when was she writing it? Like how long has she been sitting on some of these ideas and like maybe some of these are like old ideas that she couldn't let go of. I don't know.
It's fascinating.
Can't wait for
more.
Can't wait for more.
We've done it again.
Yes, we have. Cool. Okay. Join us on Patreon. Super fun. We're currently in the process of making a behind the scenes video, the making of Gender Forking. That'll be a Patreon exclusive. So hop in.
Yeah.
Check it out.
You get to see my creative process behind all my note taking, my reading. You get to see me go take a COVID test. you get to see me on my way to get a COVID test and then crying after I get the COVID test.
Oh my God. Wow, can't wait. All right. Well, thanks for listening to all of these things that we've said.
Write into us and let us know what books, music, movies you thought Bella would like that were not mentioned.
Totally. Cool. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. That's all for it. Listening to Gender Forking, a Twilight Saga podcast. All of seasons 1 and 2 are now streaming.
To stay updated about the podcast, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @genderforking. For more Twilight content from us, follow us at bowlingshirtbellas@tumblr.com.
For other inquiries, email us at bowlingshirtbellas@gmail.com. If you would like to support the production and maintenance of this podcast, head to patreon.com/genderforking.
The music you are hearing is from O. Lucifer.